Straight Shooter with Stephen A.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to this latest edition of Straight Shooter with yours truly, the one and only Stephen A. Smith, coming at you over the digital airwaves of SiriusXM. POTUS Radio, channel 124. I shouldn't say digital, but the airwaves of SiriusXM. POTUS Radio, channel 124. Number to call up, as always, is 866-967-6887. That's 866-967-6887. 866-96-POTUS, to simplify it. We've got a jam-packed show coming your way today, tonight, rather. There is an election that took place last night, specifically and particularly in the state of New Jersey, in the state of Virginia for the gubernatorial seats, and of course in New York for the mayor's seat. And I'll get into that in just a second. We're letting you know that today on this show, we will have the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, the one and only Jim Jordan, coming on with us, along with Speaker of the House, Mr. Mike Johnson. Both of them will be on the show tonight. Obviously, there's a lot to get into. Day 36 of the shutdown. The government has been shut down. Federal employees escalating above a million, haven't been receiving paychecks, 330,000 plus in the nation's capital and its surrounding areas have not been receiving a check. Obviously, I am not happy about that at all. The longest government shutdown in history, surpassing the 35 days in 2018 into 2019, which was during President Donald Trump's first term in office. It is not a good day. It is not a good time. And I'm here to tell you something right now. I'm not going to act like today is a good time. Now, last week on the show, and I had Andrew Cuomo, who was a mayoral candidate in New York City, the former three-term governor in New York State, come on the show for a lengthy period of time. In the immediate aftermath of that, Zohran Mamdani, the favorite to win that election since he had captured the Democratic nomination in the primaries. We expected him to be the favorite, and turns out he won. He had called into the show last week with about 8 minutes left in the show, so I didn't have nearly as much time to get into some of the things he has said, some of the policies he has promoted pushing forth. But nevertheless, he obviously is a very charismatic candidate, highly intelligent, very articulate. You know, you listen to all the ladies out there, not difficult on the eyes, because women 30 and under, they said he got a, like 84% of their votes, okay? Nothing Andrew Cuomo could do about that at age 67, to be quite honest with you. But nevertheless, one would not insult the voters out there by implying that that's all it took for Zohran Mamdani to gain their support. I'm going to tell you why I'm not happy about it. I like Mamdani. I'm looking forward to interviewing him. He's promised to be on this show. But I'm very, very concerned about some of the things that he said. I'm very concerned about what he once said about defunding the police. I'm calling 911. I'm being real with you. I'm calling 911. That's what I'm doing. I don't want to see less police officers. I want to see more police officers. I heard him talk about mental health experts in the subway system. I don't care about that. I want cops in the subways in New York City, where I was born and raised. Born in the Bronx, raised in Queens. That's what I want. I want to hear about no damn mental health experts in subways. Nah, I'm not trying to hear that, okay? 2% tax on the rich. Okay, fine. 11.5% capital gains tax on its face. Okay, fine. Free buses. Free grocery stores in each borough? Really? Really think that's going to work? Ladies and gentlemen, we're at a crossroads in this nation. And there's no way to slice it. And the level of vitriol that you see amongst the American citizen is because, God forbid, that you have a difference of opinion. It's not enough to agree. You know, people have to be disagreeable. And you have to be selfish if you're a person that's rich, that's making money, and you don't want to pay your fair share of taxes. Well, when you think about the billionaires in the state, in the city of New York, they make up about 48% in terms of the amount of taxes that they dole out compared to the average American, compared to the rest of New Yorkers. And if you're talking about raising their taxes while doing these other things, You're making New Yorkers, you're making New York unattractive, not just for residents, but for businesses. And if you make it unattractive for businesses and you don't, and you compromise the ability to be the capitalist that these people are, then they take their businesses elsewhere. So the money that they paid on their homes or in rent, they move out of the city or the state. Businesses follow. And ultimately the tax burden falls on to New Yorkers out there, which means that rent freezes, which is also something that Mamdani pushed. Is that really going to be plausible? Are you really going to be able to freeze rent? Or are you going to end up hiking it because you don't have enough people here to pay it? Tax revenue, where are you getting that from? See, these are all the kind of things that we have to connect the dots and ask ourselves. 1 + 1, does it equal 2? Is it really plausible that these things are going to happen? According to Mayor Hochul, 90% of the stuff Mamdani said he can't do on his own. He got to come through her in a state legislature in order to get it done. Is he going to be able to do that? What level of support is he going to have outside of young whippersnappers out there who love him and are so in love with his personality and everything else that they didn't really, really dot the I's and cross the T's and look at actual policies and the kind of effect that's going to have on New Yorkers? That's what I'm worried about. I hope I'm wrong. Because talking to him, I liked him. I'm looking forward to sitting down and interviewing with him. I just want to know where the money coming from. See, I count. Okay, I count. And I can't tell you how many young teenagers, it could be daughters, it could be nieces and nephews, it could be friends and family members or relatives of folks along that age gap. And you're asking the same question. And you know what you come up with? The people who love Mamdani the most are not people who pay bills every day. I'm not saying that applies to everybody. I'm not applying that. But they certainly not people that pay bills every day all the time. You don't see business owners clamoring to support them. I'm just saying these things are important to bring up. Because there's going to be a divide that takes place. Remember, Mamdani's ascension and his win in the mayoral election in New York last night is entirely different from what supposedly transpired in New Jersey with Mikey Sherrill beating Cinderella for the gubernatorial seat, and of course in Virginia, where this lady Sears ultimately lost to Abigail Spanberger. By the way, I think Spanberger and Sherrill were roommates at one time or another. Winsome Earl Sears, she lost by convincingly, to say the least. But the reason I bring that up is because their campaign was a bit different than Zohra Mamdani. They were talking about affordability issues just like he was. But they were also a bit more pragmatic in their thinking. They weren't talking about free grocery stores and free bus rides. They weren't talking about those things. They were talking about centrist kind of policies that would ingratiate themselves with the vast majority of American citizens in their respective states, because guess what? They recognize that's where the meat of the electorate lives. Not on the fringes with extreme progressivism. Not on the fringes with the MAGA right. 85% of the population lives there. That's where I live. That's why I'm on POTUS. That's where we live. We ain't veering one way or the other to the extreme, because we understand, excuse me, it is about affordability, but it's also about the economy. It's also about safety in the streets. And when you're talking about the combination of a free bus rides or free grocery stores, and oh, by the way, less police, or at least not more police officers, and not prioritizing law enforcement in the streets of a city, of a state, of the United States of America, you got a problem. You got a problem. And so now we got to sit up here and we got to ask ourselves, where are we going from here? Where are you going to find yourself? What you going to do? Because we got a shutdown going on. And folks going to get volatile. These government officials don't get their act together. People ain't receiving a paycheck. How long you think that's going to last before disorder reigns? You can't do this to American people. You can't do it. Now, I know that we've seen politicians say all of these things and address some of these things, but I ain't satisfied the fervor with which it's been addressed, because the shutdown is still going on. And needless to say, the president chimed in, because a lot of people chimed in And the president was one of those people. And he wanted to make sure that he had something to say about what he believes should be done. But I'm going to tell you, before I go to him, here's what I want to tell you. No matter what they deny, this election was as much about Trump as it was about anybody. Because I don't believe that folks went to the polls because of Sherelle or Spanberger or even Mamdani. I think they went to the polls because they wanted to send a message that they are against Donald Trump. Because as I've repeatedly said, you don't like the way he acts. There's Trump's tweet right there. Trump wasn't on the ballot. This is Donald Trump on his Truth Social account. Trump wasn't on the ballot, and the shutdown were the two reasons that Republicans lost elections tonight. Once again, it's about him. You ain't going to be on the ballot in 2026, the midterms. You ain't supposed to be circumventing the 22nd Amendment and running for a third term being on a ballot in 2028. You're supposed to be gone. Your last election was supposed to be in 2024, which means whether it's J.D. Vance, whether it's Marco Rubio, whether it's Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, or somebody else, it's going to be somebody other than Donald Trump. What you going to do, GOP? Because when Trump is engaging in terror force, when he's got ICE literally grabbing people off the streets and throwing them to the ground, and they happen to be American citizens, and they all ain't illegals, and one mistake after another is being made, and human rights, civil rights are being violated in pursuit, supposedly, of those who are criminals and are here illegally, yet too many people who are legal, who do have a visa, who are here righteously, are being harassed and bothered, et cetera, et cetera. And it's going on in the streets of Los Angeles, of Oregon, of Chicago, of D.C., of whatever. Why? How long do you think that's going to last? I'm talking about the optics. I don't have the numbers right now in front of me. They're going to change anyway. I'm talking about the optics, how it looks. That's not America. And when something like that happens, people are going to respond. But before they get to respond about that, in their own roundabout way, they did it through the election. And because they did it through the election, a whole bunch of people had a lot to say. Let's show Marjorie Taylor Greene, who showed up on The View on ABC earlier, and listen to what she had to say about the shutdown and the GOP's role in the shutdown. Take a listen.
The worst thing that I just can't get over is we're not working right now. And I put that criticism directly on the Speaker of the House. And we should be at work. All the people sitting in this audience, they go to work every day. People at home watching this show, they go to work every day. Ladies, you go to work every day. The people on your set. And it is an embarrassment to me that we're not in session.
That was Marjorie Taylor Greene. She's talking about the shutdown and that not being in session. The reason why I bring that up is because Governor Glenn Youngkin from Virginia, who's about to be succeeded by Spanberger, blamed Republicans' widespread election losses in the state on a recent government shutdown. Quote, I firmly believe the government shutdown was a very, very big challenge as we ran into this election. We have 330,000 government workers here that weren't getting paid. That is a real challenge heading into an election. That is what Governor Youngkin from Virginia had to say about what transpired. That's what he had to say. Zohran Mamdani had his own words to say, especially pertaining to calling out Donald Trump. Listen to what Zohran Mamdani, the mayor-elect of New York City, had to say about the president last night.
So Donald Trump, since I know you're watching, I have four words for you. Turn the volume up. We will hold bad landlords to account because the Donald Trumps of our city have grown far too comfortable taking advantage of their tenants. We will put an end to the culture of corruption that has allowed billionaires like Trump to evade taxation and exploit tax breaks. We will stand alongside unions and expand labor protections because we know, just as Donald Trump does, that when working people have ironclad rights, the bosses who seek to extort them become very small indeed.
That's Zohra Mamdani, the mayor-elect of New York City, calling out the president of the United States, basically telling them to bring it on, daring them to do so. If we know anything about the president, he'll probably try and take him up on his offer. So pay attention to what we have going on right now. We have that going on. You heard what Mamdani said. You heard Marjorie Taylor Greene blaming the GOP. You know Trump's going to respond. You got Spanberger and Sherelle being centrist, not as outspoken as Zohra Mamdani was at that particular moment. And then you have this tweet on X, I believe, put out by Speaker Mike Johnson just hours ago. Look at this, ladies and gentlemen. According to Speaker Mike Johnson, Democrats in New York City have chosen a true extremist and Marxist, and the consequences will be felt across our entire nation. Zohra Mamdani's election cements the Democratic Party's transformation to a radical, big government socialist party. House Democrats endorsed Mamdani's dangerous policies, including defunding the police, seizing private property, and massive tax increases. Now every House Democrat incumbent and candidate will co-own Mamdani's disastrous record in the 2026 midterms. Meanwhile, Republicans are fighting alongside President Trump to lower costs, make streets safer, secure our border, and deliver peace through strength. With exactly 1 year to go until the 2026 elections, the contrast between our parties has never been more clear. Mayor-elect Mamdani's extreme agenda is the future of the Democratic Party, but we will never allow it to be the future of America. That's another twist. I didn't even bring you the third one. Gavin Newsom, the governor of California. Prop 50 resolution pushed through. If you recall, that's Governor Newsom's measure to create more Democratic congressional seats, countering a similar redistricting effort pushed by President Trump in other states to protect Republican control of the House next year, especially Texas. When Texas did what it did, positioning itself to get 5 additional seats in the U.S. House of Representatives, Newsom turned around. Unlike Texas, he had to go through the voters to pull that off. The voters co-signed with him. Now you're talking about potentially 9 additional seats in the U.S. House of Representatives for the state of California. Where does that put Newsom in all of this? I'm here to tell you front and center that right now, as we speak, Governor Gavin Newsom looks like he's on the verge of being the Democratic nominee for the presidency of the United States of America in 2028. And you know what the GOP is saying? Pretty please with sugar on top, let it be you. Because of California's record on a multitude of things. Needless to say, Governor Newsom has been invited on this show on numerous occasions. I love how these folks hesitate to show up, but I see them elsewhere. Not one to answer questions. It don't stop this train. I got a lot of stuff to say about the state of California. And not just tonight. But I got other fish to fry for the moment. Mainly Speaker Johnson, Representative Jim Jordan. Both up next at some point in this show. Right here with Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Oh, I'm fully loaded. I got a lot more to say. Don't go away. Welcome back. Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A. Smith, over the airwaves of Sirius XM, POTUS Radio, channel 124. It is my honor to have my next guest on. I had the pleasure of meeting him a few weeks ago. I watch him on TV often. I'm relatively familiar with his work because I've known my man Sean Hannity for many years, and I've seen him on Sean Hannity's show on many occasions. Well, he's my guest this evening, and he has served in the U.S. House of Representatives for Ohio's 4th Congressional District since 2007. Please welcome the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, the one and only Republican, Mr. Jim Jordan, was with me right now. How are you, sir? How's everything?
I'm fine and good to be with you. And it was great to visit with you a couple weeks ago on Mr. Cuomo's show at the town hall.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure meeting you as well. And thank you for coming on to the show. Let's get right to it. Last night, Democrats won three key races in New York, New Jersey, and Virginia, as you well know. In your opinion, is this a referendum on the president's first 9 months in office?
No, I think it's three blue states and one really blue city. I mean, a major city, our biggest city. I think that's what it is. And for me, frankly, the takeaway is that, you know, we got a socialist. He might put the name Democrat in front of it, Democrat socialist, but he's still a socialist who's elected now to, again, our largest city, the great city of New York. So I think that's the key takeaway. No one really expected us to win, Republicans to win in New Jersey or in Virginia or in California or, frankly, even New York. But the fact that they elected a socialist there is, I think, probably. I was telling someone the other day, I had the opportunity 30 some years ago to compete in the sport of wrestling in what was the Soviet Union. And I tell people, you go there, you thank the good Lord you live here. I remember we were in Moscow in February. It was like 400 below zero. And you walk into stores there that are run by the government, which is what Mr. Mamdani wants to do in New York. And there was nothing on the shelves. I mean, it was the most gray, dismal place. That's where they're headed in New York if the policies he's advocating actually happen. So I think that's the real takeaway from yesterday's election is what happened in our great city of New York.
I'm wondering how can the GOP, the Republican side, completely absolve themselves from this by just saying that it's the blue states, it's a New York, it's a New Jersey, it's a Virginia, when we're in the midst of the longest shutdown in government history right now. And obviously, President Trump, he's the president of the United States. And even though I understand what role the Democrats are playing, at least to some degree, the reality is that this is the art of the deal. This is the president that we're talking about here that usually finds a way to get things done. But the shutdown is still going on. Isn't there a level of culpability for this election outcome that you guys should feel because of the shutdown?
I mean, I think there's a level of frustration that all Americans feel to some degree, and certainly Americans who are working and not getting paid, like some of our air traffic controllers and other things. But I think the culpability is with the folks who wouldn't vote to keep it open. I voted to keep it open. Republicans did that in the House 14 times. Democrats had an opportunity to do the same thing in the Senate. Republicans voted for it, but Democrats didn't. And even one of their senators who you interviewed a couple of weeks ago, Senator Fetterman, says Democrats are responsible for this. And the real question, and everyone knows that's the case, Stephen, because 6 months ago, Chuck Schumer voted for the exact same thing he won't vote for now. There's a reason they call it a continuing resolution, because you continue to fund the government at the levels you've already agreed to. But now Chuck Schumer says, no, we're not going to do it. That's to me, Chuck Schumer's having a debate with Chuck Schumer. And right now, the same dynamic, I think, that put Mr. Mamdani in as the next mayor of New York, this left that's taken over the Democrat Party, this radical left, That's the same dynamic that's keeping Chuck Schumer from voting to keep the government open, even though he voted for it before, because it's the left that has now taken control of the Democrat Party. That's all the pressure. Chuck Schumer's concerned about a primary. Even Hakeem Jeffries is now concerned about a primary from the left in that same city that will now be run by a socialist.
What about those who are arguing that this was the plan for the Democrats all along? They never had any intentions of reaching a deal and signing on for the CR because, you know something, it would not have benefited them for the election. Let's wait until the election is over and then let's see what happens, because I think Senator Ted Cruz alluded to that the other day, saying he expects a deal to be done relatively quickly now that the election is over. Is that plausible in your mind? Is that what's going on?
Only Democrats would know. Only Chuck Schumer and the Democrats, frankly, in the Senate would know that. But, you know, because we heard first it was going to go until after the No Kings rally. Then it was going to go to November 1st when certain benefits and programs that are funded by the federal government come due and the pay period ends for that month. Then we said, well, now it's going to be the election. I don't know, because there are some senators who are taking the way you phrased the question, the first question, that, oh, yesterday was great for Democrats, and so we need to keep the shutdown going and hold out for this crazy scheme that they want to continue to do with Obamacare. I don't know. What I do know is it's been now over a month, and, you know, the pay of our military, our people that put on the uniform, protect our countries in jeopardy, and a host of other things, and it just doesn't make any sense. When, again, we didn't put anything new in the continuing resolution, we just continued the funding at the current level, and they said no.
We're in the longest government shutdown as we just finished talking. I'm here talking to Jim Jordan, chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene appeared on ABC's The View yesterday and blamed Speaker Mike Johnson, calling it an embarrassment that he won't bring the House back into session. Is he the right person to lead right now, in your estimation, based on what she had to say?
Yeah, the Speaker's done a fine job. It's a tough job, but I think he's done it well. You know, when you only got a few seat majority, it's tough to get things passed. I mean, again, this shutdown can only be blamed 14 times in 36 days. Democrats had an opportunity to keep the government open and to make sure things got done. And it wasn't just Senator Fetterman and two other senators who agreed with Republicans. Every government employee union, federal employee union, has said the same thing. What are you doing, Democrats? Open up the stink. You don't think air traffic controllers want the Democrats to open up the government and vote for the same level of spending they did before? Of course they do. They're all saying that. But yet Democrats persist in just saying, no, we're not going to do it because Obamacare, everything they told us about it turned out to be false. That's what they want to protect. Remember when they said, if you like your plan, you can keep your plan. If you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. Premiums will go down. President Obama told us premiums will go down $1,500 on average for family. None of that worked out, so they had to subsidize it. Then they had to extend it. Now they want to extend it again. That's where we're at, and they won't fund the government for that. That just doesn't make sense to me. Open up the government, and we'll have a debate on health care. That's fine. That's what we need to do and you know, debate public policy and try to work something out. That's all fine and good. But right now, keeping the government closed makes no sense.
Representative Jordan, crystallize it for my audience out there that may not know. When we talk about prices increasing, when we talk about what the cost was supposed to be compared to what it is, could you paint that picture for us? I remember reading something that, you know what, they said the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, was going to cost about $950 billion a year. Now I'm reading numbers at $1.3 trillion. I'm hearing you guys say it's going to cost even more than that down the pike. What are we talking about here when you have the Democratic Party literally saying we have to address this ACA subsidies and you guys are saying, no, we're not trying to do that. That's a non-negotiable issue. It is what it is. We're not budging from our position. Please explain in numbers.
Yeah, great question. We just think it's the wrong answer. The way you bring down health care costs is not have more government. I mean, history shows you more government gets involved, drives up the cost. Look at higher education, for goodness. Look what it costs people to go there because there's so much government involved in the whole student loan process and everything else. So, yeah, when you get more government involved, it tends to typically make things less efficient and drive up cost. And that's what's happened with healthcare. What we need is more association health plans, more health savings accounts, more ability to have just the high deductible catastrophic plan. Most families just want to know if their son or daughter gets a really bad thing, that there's going to be insurance there to take care of them. That's what they want. And that kind of plan has much lower premiums. So those are the kind of things we need to work on, not this more and more government driving up the cost. That is the problem. And by the way, this subsidy that they want to continue this expansion and this subsidy that they want to do again, it goes primarily to insurance companies. It's always the insurance companies and the hospitals that seem to get all the money, and it's the families who get shortchanged. We want to empower families, and the way to do that is not more government taking money from one taxpayer and giving it to the insurance company that's supposed to, in the end, benefit some other taxpaying family. That never seems to work out very well, as evidenced by the fact they had to extend this. They set the deadline, Democrats did, that was done supposedly done during COVID to help during COVID when things were awful tough and families were, you know, people couldn't go back to work. That's what they did. And now the deadline's coming due and they said, we're going to shut down the government if you don't extend and follow the deadline that the Democrats set.
But you talked about having a discussion, negotiating, working this out, et cetera, words like that. One could easily argue that, you know what, you guys are in power now, but you guys have been around for quite a while. Do you have a definitive plan? And if you do not, why don't you have a definitive plan? After all the years, the representatives such as yourself and others have been on Capitol Hill knowing that this has been a problem that has been kicked down the can has been kicked down the road on so many years. Does the GOP have a plan, a definitive plan to make healthcare work in America? If so, what is it?
Yeah, it's not more government. It's less government, more marketplace, more decision power made at health savings accounts where you can work with your employer. You can put money away that can be used for health savings accounts. There's a tax benefit there. All those things make sense. We want to expand that, which actually empowers people, doesn't make them dependent on insurance companies and on the government. And again, I go back. Obamacare was supposed to, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare was supposed to be the end-all, be-all and fix health care. Well, it didn't work, as evidenced by the fact that the things they told us turned out not to be accurate and the fact that they have to keep trying to subsidize it even more. That's making matters worse, I think, in my opinion. So let's focus on those things that actually empower families, empower people, not more government subsidies.
How much longer do you anticipate this shutdown will continue?
I have no idea. That's, again.
You have no idea.
That's a question. Well, look, there's been talk all week that, you know, something may happen this week. And I think a lot of us were thinking, okay, maybe like you said, after the election, Stephen, they'll come to their senses and do something. But then you got senators today. I think like Senator Murphy and Senator Sanders said, we won in three blue states and one really blue city. Let's take the shutdown further. Let's demand more. Let's go. I don't know. I truly don't know. It's been one of the strangest things I've seen in my time in Congress.
Back to Marjorie Taylor Greene, Representative Jordan. She continuing with her appearance on The View. She told the ladies there she's fed up with the quote unquote pissing contest in Washington amongst men. What's your response to that, sir?
Well, I don't know. What was the comedian who said, you know, I resemble that remark because I'm one of these older guys, I guess. So, look, I mean, we have debates. I like Marjorie. I supported Marjorie when she first ran. Marjorie and I we've been friends, and she's a good member of Congress. Look, you have policy differences and debates here. You fight it out. What I know is Marjorie's been good on a lot of the issues that I've cared about. When the government told us all kinds of things that weren't accurate relative to COVID. She was one of the people saying, wait a minute, you know, government's telling you can't go to church, you can't go to work, you can't go to school, taking away your liberties, and everything they told us about COVID was almost as bad as what they told us about Obamacare. None of it was true. So I've worked with Marjorie. She's a good member. And, you know, you got all kinds of people in Congress who are debating the issues that matter to the American people.
I got you. Representative Jordan, I got to transition back to President Trump because I'm going to tell you what I think is not working. I'm not going to even get into policy. If you're a Republican, you're a GOP member, even you're a centrist to some degree, there's some things you agree with. I got news for you. It's unpopular for people in my position to say, I don't disagree with everything he's done. There are some things he's done I do agree with. And there are other things that I don't agree with. But I will tell you what I don't like. I don't like the verbiage. I don't like the rhetoric. I don't like the divisiveness. I think that it serves to exacerbate a lot of situations. And quite frankly, I think it serves to make your job, that of members of the House, as well as the Senate, far more difficult than it needs to be. And I think it rallies Democrats in ways that most other things simply do not. I'm wondering, however, when are you guys going to speak up for him? And do you ever tell him to be quiet? Do you ever tell him to calm down? Because every time I turn around, it's almost, I'm not talking about you, sir, but there's a lot of people on the right. If I see one more person fawning over this man, I'm going to lose my mind. You can't go up in front of a microphone and just answer questions. These people say, I just want to applaud the leadership of President Trump. They can't get enough of him. It just drives me crazy.
Yeah. Well, here's what I'll say, Stephen. I say this all the time. I think we make the job of being an elected official way too complicated. It's pretty simple. What'd you tell the voters you were going to do when you put your name on the ballot and you ran for the job? If they elect you, go do what you said. I have not seen anyone in public life in the time I've been in public office. I've not seen anyone do a better job of accomplishing what they told the voters they were going to do than President Trump. And that's why I so appreciate him. There's a lot of other things I appreciate him. I spent a lot of time, got to know him over the last decade. You love sports like I do. President Trump thinks like an athlete. He stinking hates to lose. And I tell people that is a good quality. You want a commander in chief who knows how to win and plays to win. I love that about him. But what I mostly love is he told the American people he was going to cut taxes. We did. He told them that he was going to make sure Iran didn't get nuclear capability. He did. He said he was going to secure the border. He did. In his first term, he said he was going to put the embassy in Jerusalem. He did. He said he was going to build the wall. He did. He said he was going to put conservatives on the court. He did. No one has done more of what they told the American people they were going to do than this guy. And nobody I've been around in politics thinks so much like an athlete, so much like a guy who knows how to win than this guy. And that's what I like about him. So that's what I talk about. And I talk about the results and the attitude that I've seen time and time again from this guy.
Let me transition to you directly, because you've directed your Judiciary Committee to scrutinize past investigations into the president's political opponents, yet critics suggest you're now mirroring the same kind of partisan targeting you guys condemned.
Yeah.
How do you respond to allegations that your oversight is less about reform and more about settling scores?
I'd stick to the facts. It's not about settling scores. I'll give you an example. 2 weeks ago, we did a criminal referral for John Brennan. We think John Brennan came in front of our committee during a deposition and wasn't square with us, said things to us that were not accurate. John Brennan told us in that deposition, he said that the dossier, going back 10 years, he said the dossier was not part of the, he didn't want it in the intelligence community assessment, said he encouraged it not to be in there. Then we have this summer, Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, declassifies the report, releases that report from the House Intelligence Committee from several years ago, and it says exactly the opposite. It said John Brennan put in writing that he wanted the dossier included in the Intelligence Committee assessment, and it relates a story that took place in there where a CIA official approaches Director Brennan and says, Director, this dossier doesn't stand up. There's no underlying intelligence to support it. It shouldn't go in the Intelligence Community report and the Intelligence Community assessment. And Brennan's response was, yeah, but doesn't it ring true? I think fully displaying his motivation, which was to go get the president. And that all happened back in that critical time frame between Election Day 2016 and Inauguration Day, January 2017, when they were changing the report. So one thing I know, you're not supposed to lie, but you're definitely not supposed to lie when you're under oath talking to Congress in a deposition, and that's what John Brennan did. So we're not talking about revenge. We're not talking about retribution. We're talking about the facts. And we do very few of these on the Judiciary Committee. The facts have to be there before we will send a criminal referral to the Attorney General of the United States. But we did it in this situation because it was warranted.
I'm going to throw something by you, Representative Jordan. I'm anxious to hear what you feel about this, sir. Can't tell you where I got it from. But I heard it from a few people, okay? A few people as I grow in this business, because I'm a novice at this. I'm still learning as we go along, Representative Jordan, right? I'm a novice.
You sound like you got some experience to me with the questions you're asking.
I know I got a few people. So I remember I was told that around 2016, that, you know, it was believed that President Trump had Hillary Rodham Clinton dead to rights, that he knew about the emails, and y'all gotten access to the emails, supposedly the deleted emails. You remember all that whole scandal, the 33,000 emails, all that stuff.
Yeah, right.
And I was told when abundance of people wanted to get at Hillary Rodham Clinton, the president at the time, Donald Trump, said, "Nope, leave her alone.
Yeah,
it's for the good of the country."
Well said.
Now we've seen movies, we've seen all the. First of all, I want to know whether or not that's true. What I just said. But secondly, and most importantly, what I want to know is decisions that are deemed in the best interest of the country are made all the time. And sometimes rehashing old stories, even when it involves somebody telling fibs to you guys on Capitol Hill, might deem not in the best interest of the country to move forward with that. What about that mentality and addressing it from that standpoint?
No, fair enough. And I'll do the second part first.
Sure.
Fair enough. But one of the ways you hopefully prevent this kind of stuff from happening in the future is actually holding key people accountable. And we're talking about John Brennan, who was head of the CIA. Pretty important position. And if he's falsifying things and then not being square with a congressional committee who's looking into that, that's a problem. And by the way, when we caught Mr. Brennan saying these things that weren't accurate, we weren't even asking him about this particular issue, the whole Russia hoax thing. We were asking him about the 51 former intel officials who signed that letter saying the Hunter Biden laptop was part of a Russian information operation. That was bogus because the FBI had the laptop and knew it was real. But they send that letter. That becomes the basis for Biden to use it in debate and all that other stuff. So I think there's a pattern with Brennan and not being square with the country, not being square with the Congress. But you're also right. President Trump, if he was a man of retribution, he would have went after Hillary in 2017. Because remember what happened. The Clinton campaign hired the law firm Perkins Coie, who hired the public relations firm Fusion GPS, who hired a foreigner, Christopher Steele, who wrote the dossier that was complete National Enquirer garbage. And yet Jim Comey used that to go spy on President Trump's campaign. To my knowledge, that has never happened in American history, but that was what took place. And we all know that's the facts, and Clinton was behind it. President Trump wins. No one thought he would, but he does. He doesn't go after Clinton. He says, no, her country, her and her husband have served our country. We're not going to do that. He didn't go after her. So this is not a guy about retribution. This is all about holding people accountable. That's what I'm doing as the guy who gets the privilege of chairing the Judiciary Committee, and that's where we're going to stay focused.
I'll take you at your word for it, but I know you're not sitting here right now and tell me that this president is not about retribution the way that Bolton, Comey, everybody. We've seen the tweets. We've seen what he put out to the public. We've seen the orders that he's given Pam Bondi. I mean, we've seen with Jack Smith. We've seen this stuff, Representative Jordan. You're not going to say that this president is the same as he was in 2016, are you?
In all those you pointed out, the facts are there. John Bolton was indicted 18 counts, keeping and sharing classified information. And of course, the irony is not lost on anyone. John Bolton's the one who went after the president, criticized him. Comey did the same thing. They all criticized the president on the classified document stuff when he's the one guy who's allowed to declassify things as the commander in chief of the country. So that the facts are still there. He might have tweeted that stuff out, but that doesn't mean the facts don't support what he's saying. And I'm driven by the facts. I am totally driven by the facts.
I'm not questioning that. That's why I got into it with Cash Patel. I wasn't questioning the facts. I understood the facts. I'm like, I quit the investigation with the NBA. That's legitimate. You and what you're talking about, the investigation, I'm not questioning the legitimacy of it. I'm just saying don't tell me that retribution has nothing to do with it. Donald Trump in 2025 is not what we described in 2016. Are we willing to at least concede that? That's what I'm asking.
Well, I here's what I'll say. I think President Trump's a darn good president. Done more of what he said he would do than any president in my lifetime. I appreciate him so much and what he's doing.
Yeah.
I think you look at what he's been through. I mean, Stephen, think about it. They spied on his campaign. Then it was Mueller investigation. Then it was impeachment one, impeachment two, Arctic Frost, Jack Smith, raid his home, assassination attempt, and depose every member of his family. I mean, holy, and through it all, I think he's kept an amazing attitude. Amazing attitude. Like, tell me anyone else who could handle all that. Again,
you saw me. I was on the sports channel when we were talking about the whole NBA investigation. I looked into the camera and I said, he's coming. I did not say the investigation was illegitimate. I said, he's coming. People been messing with him. He's coming. You understand? I knew him before he ran for president. We were at sporting events all the time. I know the guy. So I'm like, I know him. I'm telling y'all, he's coming. But look, before I let you get on out of here.
And you like his attitude, don't you? Like his attitude.
I don't like the pettiness because I think it gets in the way of government. And I think that he's the kind of person that if he's committed to getting a deal done, he can get a deal done. And sometimes the pettiness gets in the way and it really, really bothers me.
You can get a deal done. I agree with that, yeah.
And y'all can't call him out the way that I can call him out because I'm not an elected official. So I can get away with stuff that y'all can't.
But I heard your interest. I heard you're interested in that. Is that right?
I don't know about that. I don't know. I'm not ready. I'm not qualified. Before I let you get on out of here, a couple last questions for you. Sit here today, in the aftermath of this election, we heard Mike Johnson talk about his description of the Democratic Party as we speak. But I'm also looking at Gavin Newsom, Prop 50, and how people are pushing him front and center because, oh, my Lord, look at what's happened with Prop 50 in the state of California. Is the Democratic Party more emblematic of Zohran Mamdani in your eyes, Gavin Newsom, or do you view them not just as a Republican, but as a party, as one and the same?
I think the hard left has taken over the party. I heard you earlier. I do think it's, if I had to bet today, I would agree with you that Newsom is likely their candidate. I really think that. Whether that's good or bad, I don't know. But I do think what's bad is the left now controls the party. I always, when I'm out talking with groups around the country and Republicans all over the place, I always say, not all Democrats are crazy, but the left that controls their party is. I mean, you can go issue by issue, Stephen. It is crazy to defund the police. It is crazy not to have a border, which was the situation under Joe Biden. It is crazy to say men should compete against women in sports. It is crazy to criticize the National Guard coming to D.C., the capital city, which the president had every right to do that, and clean up crime. So much safer here. It's crazy to criticize that. But the Democrats took all those positions. How about this one? It's crazy to let a Chinese spy balloon fly clear across the country and then shoot it down. I think I'd have shot it down before it went across the country, and we know Trump would have done that. So the party's crazy. Who they nominate, I don't know, but if I had to bet today, I'm with you. I think it's Gavin Newsom.
I'm going to let you get on out of here, but my last words to you would be this. Despite everything you just said, the president's disapproval ratings is hovering around 61 to 63% or so. I want to know how worried you guys are in terms of your relationship with working class Americans, considering the fact that his approval ratings are not what you would hope them to be.
Well, two things. One, I don't know that the big, beautiful bills had the tax cuts and everything that we put in that bill, which I think were good, have had time to take impact. Or have a real impact yet. I think they will before the election next year. I also think once we get this tariff thing ironed out, that will help our economy. You know, the market's up, interest rates are coming down. I think there's lots of good things happening there. And then I'll point to our state. 15 years ago, Ohio was the bellwether state in presidential politics. 2016, President Trump carried our state by 8.5. 2020, he carried it by 8.5. 2024 by 11.5. That tells you things are changing. Youngstown, Ohio. Is now represented. They have a state rep who's a Republican, a state senator who's a Republican, and the congressman who represents Youngstown is Republican as well. 20 years ago, that was the most Democrat area on the planet. So working class, middle class people have come our way. I think they stay with our party because we're the party of common sense. They're the party of crazy. And that's what this comes down. That's why Ohio, I think, has moved so much in a Republican direction.
Representative Jim Jordan, really, really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule. I love the fact that you've been on the show. You're welcome back anytime. Folks from both sides of the aisle, I don't play that mess. I welcome everybody. I'm not ostracizing anybody. Know that to you and your colleagues. You're always welcomed on this show. Thank you so much for your time, man. I really appreciate it.
You bet. Enjoyed it. Thanks, Stephen.
Chairman for the House Judiciary Committee, the one and only Jim Jordan, right here with Stephen A. Straight Shooter with Stephen A. I really enjoyed that conversation. I enjoyed talking to him. I'm not sure I agree with everything, but he said a lot of stuff that really, really rings true. I can't deny it. I just can't. More Straight Shooter with your boy in a minute. Straight Shooter with your boy, Stephen A. Smith. Courtesy SiriusXM, channel 124, POTUS Radio, channel 124. Number to call in, as always, is 866-967-6887. 866-967-6887, 866-96-POTUS. I really enjoyed that conversation with Jim Jordan. Listen, you know, you're not going to agree on everything, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, if you're on one side of the aisle or the other, you're not going to agree. It's just that simple. But what you can't deny are the points that they actually make. You know, and then you dig in, and I was digging in from the standpoint, don't tell me this man ain't about retribution now. We've seen the tweets. We've seen, the post on Truth Social. We've seen the commands given to Pam Bondi. We've seen all of this kind of stuff, okay? But in the end, you also heard Jim Jordan say, look at what they tried to do to him. It's kind of justified, which brings us and harkens us back to things that the Democrats did to get at him when he left office. Let sleeping dogs lie. Leave well enough alone. A lot of people didn't want to do that. In this concerted effort to keep him out of office, inspired and ultimately propelled him to return back to office. See, these are the kind of things you got to think about along the way. Now, that doesn't absolve Trump from some of the nonsense he's doing. By the way, Tom Homan, our border czar, you know, his personality is his personality, and I get that. Personally speaking, I like him. But I don't like everything he's doing. You know, I mean, you can't be grabbing people off the streets. And anybody that's here illegally is a criminal. You can't think like that. Get the real criminals. There's real criminals. You can't look at everybody the same. You know, because seeing folks getting snatched up in the streets, particularly by mistake when they're American citizens, they just must be of Hispanic heritage or something. That's not a good look for our country either. And that can end up working against the Republicans if they're not careful. All of these things are things that people got to think about, got to be careful about. But it involves conversation, dialogue, get to the bottom of things in an effort to make things better for the American people as a whole. That's what it's all about. That's what I'm all about. Straight Shooter, POTUS Radio, channel 124, hour number 2. Up next, Stephen A. Welcome to hour number 2 of Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A. Over the airwaves of SiriusXM, POTUS Radio, channel 124. Thanks again to Chairman for the House Judiciary Committee, one and only Jim Jordan, for being on the show with us. And now I have one of his colleagues in the House with me. He is the Speaker of the House. My guest has served as the 56th Speaker of the United States House of Representatives since 2023. He is now the man at the center of the longest government shutdown in American history. He is Mr. Mike Johnson, and he's on the show with us right now. Speaker Johnson, it's an honor to have you, sir. How are you?
Stephen, it's great to be with you. Congrats on the new show. It's still kind of new, I guess.
Yes, it is.
I'm going to be on later tonight with our good buddy, Sean Hannity. I'll tell him you said hello.
Well, my condolences, because he's crazy. I wish you all the luck in the world when it comes to that guy. But let me get right to it. First of all, when is this shutdown going to end, Speaker?
I wish I could tell you. Really, the only person that can answer that is Chuck Schumer, because he leads the Democrats in the Senate. And as you know, because you're keeping the score, they voted 15 times now to keep the government closed, 15 different occasions. They've made it the longest in history. I don't know if that was the objective all along, but real pain is being felt by real people. And it's getting more and more painful by the hour. We've got to break the impasse. But here's the thing, Stephen, as you know, because you're tracking this, we sent them a totally clean, nonpartisan CR. I know that sounds like, legislative speak to people back home. But what it means is we filed the simplest possible measure. It was only 24 pages in length to just keep the government in operation, so that we could finish the appropriations process, the government spending bills for the year, and negotiate what remained on the calendar for the end of this year. Healthcare was one of those things. There were lots of issues, but this is the way it's always been done. And the Democrats always have done it in the past. They did it 13 times during the 4 years of the Biden administration, but now suddenly they wanted to pick a fight because they had to show that they were tough to what I think is the Marxist rise in their party, and they're running scared because of that.
I was getting ready to ask you, verbally speaking, not anything they hint towards anything, what do they actually say is the reason they haven't signed the CR?
Well, they claim that this is a fight about healthcare, but it's not true, and everybody here on the Hill knows it's not true. What they're trying to say this is about is the expiration of the Obamacare COVID-era subsidies. It expires at the end of December, December 31, not the end of the fiscal year, September 30. So they needed something to claim that what this was about, and they globbed onto that. It's not legitimate. It's not real. We were always planning, every Republican and every Democrat in the building, Senate and House, knew that we were going to have to work our way through that complex issue in October, November, December, before the end of the year. They tried to claim that it's about that. That's a red herring. That's a distraction. The real reason, and this is just the honest truth, is that Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries are both from New York. We saw what happened in New York City last night. We see the rise of the activist kind of socialist base in the party. It terrifies the old guard here on Capitol Hill. And both of those guys are concerned they're going to get a challenge from a Mondani disciple in their next election cycle. So they had to show a fight. They had to pick a fight. And this is one they chose.
What about the notion that they did this and they've been holding out because they knew that the election was coming up and that it would look as if the GOP was the ones that were most culpable in all of this and it would work for them in the election? I think it stands to reason that might have had something to do with it when you consider the fact that Zohra Mamdani just won the mayoral seat in New York. And obviously you got Sherrell and Spanberger that won the gubernatorial seats in New Jersey and Virginia, respectively.
Yeah, look, but there were no surprises last night. I mean, blue states and blue cities elected blue candidates. I mean, that was what everybody expected, frankly. Anything else would have been a surprise. I don't think we should read too much into the results last night or into the results of any off-year election, because they almost never indicate what will happen in the upcoming year. We know the big contest is the midterm elections next fall. We are very bullish about that on my side of the aisle, because we have a lot to show. We've got a great record to run on. We've been delivering on our promises to the people. And Stephen, in the last election cycle, last fall, we had a true demographic shift. I mean, a real historic shift in the electorate, where we had a record number of Hispanic and Latino voters and Black and African American voters and Jewish voters and union workers, all these demographics. And we're going to prove to them they made the right choice, and they'll have time to evaluate that before next November. And I think it's going to go well for us.
I'm wondering how concerned are you going to prove that, because I'm looking at the president right now. Like, listen, I've seen the tariff wars. I mean, there's pledges, but they ain't guarantees. I don't disagree with what he did with the border, because I never thought Biden should have opened the borders. So I'm going to be on the record right now. I don't care how unpopular it is. I agreed with him. I understood. Once Biden opened the borders, you got to do something to close it. You can't have all of that happening. Not in this country. We get that part. But I also know that the manner in which it's been handled, particularly by ICE, you know, in terms of people being grabbed in the streets, everybody's not criminals. Everybody's not here illegally. And I think the optics and how bad it has looked has served to scare some of the American citizens that the level of chaos that exists in the streets of America right now, to some degree, in some could somehow, some way mirror what we saw during his first term, and that kind of scares people as well. I want to know, does people like yourself and others, have you thought about that? Have you talked to the president about that?
Yes, look, we're aware of the optics, and we're trying to do the right thing by the American people. That's the promise we made last November. The president ran on it. The border, the open border, and the chaos that it created, as you know, was really the number one issue in the election last fall. And we went out and promised that we would bring order back to the chaos and that we would fix that. We would stand for the rule of law. If you don't have a secure border, you don't have sovereignty as a country. And everybody understood that. We checked the box. As you know, Stephen, I mean, we've had almost zero illegal alien crossings over the border in the last several months. And that's because we have a commander in chief who's taken it seriously. And now we have to deal with the estimated roughly 20 million people who came across that border unlawfully. Now, you got to do it in the right way. We want to go after the hardened criminals and get them out of the country. That's like a 90%, you know, poll of the issue. But you got to be careful about maintaining the rule of law, ensuring that people are following it. And the White House is well aware of that. We are too. But I would say this, in, you know, comparing the two parties as we go into the next election cycle, we really do have a split screen. I mean, just consider the last 9 or 10 months, you know, the beginning of this Congress, the beginning of the new administration. On one side, you got President Trump and the Republicans, and they're delivering for the people. I mean, we solved the border crisis. We're trying to solve the crime crisis in creative ways. We cut taxes. We cut regulations. Fraud, waste, and abuse in government. I mean, we got energy, American energy dominance going again. We got new trade agreements more favorable for the country. And the president is solving wars around the globe. He's up to 8 or 9 now. And on the other side of the screen, you got the Democrats. And what can they say they accomplished in 9 months? They shut the government down. You know, they pushed some ICE officers around. They inspired political violence. I mean, this is not hyperbole. This is the real comparison between the two. I like our chances going into the election because we're working for the people and we can show it.
We're talking to Republican out of Louisiana, one-on-one speaker Mike Johnson right here with Stephen A. on Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene appeared on ABC's The View on Tuesday. She says she blamed you, sir, for not bringing the House back into session, calling it, quote, an embarrassment. I guess the question would be, why won't you call the members back? And number two, how do you feel about what she directed directly at you?
I'm not unaccustomed to hearing criticism from Marjorie. We have intense fellowship, as we see in the Deep South, Stephen. And she knows I've got an open door. She can come in and talk with me anytime. But, you know, she goes on these shows. She likes to get the big interviews, and that's fine. Everybody has the right, you know. But I'll tell you this. I'm in constant contact with all the House Republicans. And the reason we've not brought them back yet is because we did our job. We passed the clean, nonpartisan, continuing resolution on September 19th. And we're now waiting for the Senate to do their job. Chuck Schumer and the Democrats have held off on that. They voted against it. They don't want to open the government. And so we can't do anything until we fulfill that most basic function. I mean, that's the most basic responsibility of the Senate and the House of the Congress is to make government work for the people, to keep it open, to keep the services flowing and the troops paid and all the rest. And so that's the first order of business, and anything else is just a side issue. So I will tell you, I have a weekly conference call with all the House Republicans, and I talk to them more often. 99.5% of all the House Republicans understand exactly what we're doing and why. Marjorie has a difference of opinion. That's up to her, you know.
But why is it that you're sounding like there's absolutely nothing you can do? Like there's nothing you can do? I mean, if the Democrats don't agree with this, this is what it is. The government's going to be shut down, and there's absolutely no recourse that you have available to you in your arsenal at all. You or President Trump, who I call the art of the deal. I do that facetiously because I'm getting on him. I can do that. I've known him before he became the president. The art of the deal, the guy that can make a deal, that can figure out a way to get a deal done. Where's that guy with all of this right now? Our federal employees are not being paid.
I'm glad you asked. I mean, he is the great deal maker, and he tried before this began. Remember, we had that fateful meeting where Leader John Thune in the Senate, I, Chuck Schumer, Hakeem Jeffries, the two Democrat leaders, we all went to the Oval Office. He brought us all in, and we sat right across Resolute Desk, and the president tried to make a deal with those guys. And he said, guys, don't close the government down. It doesn't help anyone. It hurts the American people. And they just basically gave him the middle finger, Stephen. I mean, that's what happened. And so they walked out. The president said, these guys don't want to make a deal. They want to shut the government down. And that's what they've proven over and over. So you're asking me why I'm not negotiating right now. Here's the simple truth. There is nothing that I can pull off of that continuing resolution to make it more palatable for the Democrats. Because guess what? I didn't put a single Republican partisan priority or policy on that measure at all. In fact, Stephen, this is so important. This CR, this continuing resolution, continues the government funding at the current levels, which is the Biden era policies and spending. I mean, literally, it's the Democrats' stuff that they're voting against. So there's nothing I can do to go make it better. I have nothing to negotiate. I literally don't have anything I can pull off of that. And that's the whole problem here. Again.
No, there's people that's going to look at the Republican side now, not just the Democrat side. We, you know, because you got people think they have an agenda. They wanted to, you know, they wanted the voters to have to show that they have voters' remorse for voting Trump in the office. They wanted to use this for the election and gain an advantage. There's a whole bunch of reasons that people throw out about the Democrat side. On the Republican side, people look at y'all and they say, you know what, the American public are going to question the level of seriousness that you guys have about governing, accusing y'all of grandstanding to some degree. How are you going to answer the American public as those sentiments grow in your direction?
Well, we've done the opposite of grandstanding. I mean, I have a live press conference every single morning and I go out in front of the American people, and, you know, Fox News carries it live. Other stations do as well. Every morning, we take questions from the press and we just look straight into the camera, Stephen, and tell them the simple truth. The truth is very simple. We have laid bare all the cards. Everything's out on the table. We gave a simple nonpartisan measure to keep the government in operation so Congress can do its job here and finish everything else. I don't have a political strategy. I'm not playing a game here. I'm just trying to keep the government in operation. It's the Democrats who are engaging in this campaign of misinformation and doing this. And I know it sounds like a he said, she said thing, but the American people are smart and they can watch the tally. They can watch the scoreboard. 15 times, House and Senate Republicans have voted to open the government. 15 times, Democrats have voted to close it. And I mean, that's the score. That's the reality. And that's the thing they can't get around.
I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Representative Jordan about specifics in regards to the finances. You know, we can talk all day, the Affordable Care Act, subsidies, they're going to double, the premiums are going to double, et cetera. We've heard all of that. That's us talking. We're not the Speaker of the House of Representatives. You are. Paint the picture. Obamacare, what it cost then, what it was supposed to cost, what it ended up costing, what we're anticipating it's going to cost, really to articulate and illuminate the urgency of dealing with this healthcare crisis we got in this country. Could you paint a financial picture, the numbers, throw it out there for my audience to hear so we can understand?
Yeah, I will. It is a crisis, and it's not created by Republicans. I mean, that's the biggest political gaslighting in the history of America. Remember that the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, is exactly the opposite. It's been the Unaffordable Care Act, because from the time it was enacted in 2010, by most estimates, premiums have been risen by 60% in most categories. I mean, healthcare is unaffordable and it's increasingly inaccessible because the system doesn't work. And the Democrats' response to that is to subsidize it. Stephen, you know, when the government is subsidizing something, it means it's not working on its own. They got to prop it up. Well, they want to extend the COVID era Obamacare subsidy, which is really a subsidy to insurance companies. And you know what happens when you subsidize insurance companies? It drives the cost up even further. So we need real reform to make healthcare affordable again, to increase quality, increase access to care for more people. The Republican Party is the party trying to do it. We're the only ones that have ideas on the table to do that. The Democrats just want to keep doubling down and spending more tax money to prop up a broken system. I'll give you a quick example. This is not just talk from us. We did it. In the One Big Beautiful Bill, the Working Families Tax Cut, in the House version that we passed and sent over to the Senate, we had what's called a cost-sharing reduction, a CSR provision in there. It would have driven, according to the Congressional Budget Office, not Republicans, it would have driven the average premium down in America by 12%, and it would have saved taxpayers about $30 billion over 10 years. The Senate Democrats fought to take that provision out of the bill, so it didn't make it in the final legislation. By comparison, okay, remember I said that would have dropped prices, premiums by 12%, and save about $30 billion. If you extend the Obamacare subsidy, the COVID-era subsidy, as they're trying to do, without any reforms, it will only reduce premiums by about 5.7% on average, and it will cost the taxpayers $358 billion additional dollars. Look, we have real ideas to fix it. We actually published booklets full of ideas. We got to build consensus around it, and it's a very complicated thing because healthcare is very complicated. It's a big percentage of the U.S. economy. We have to do it right, and Republicans are the ones that will lead us out of that wilderness.
Thanksgiving is in 3 weeks, sir. SNAP benefits are being cut in half, as we all know, but they're talking about how it'll take weeks or even months for recipients to get them. Could you explain why that is?
Yeah, it's a great question. The easiest way to stop all this chaos and get SNAP benefits rolling right now is for Democrats to come in here tomorrow and vote to reopen the government. But if they don't do that, We're relying upon a contingency fund. Here's the problem. It's math. It's about $9 billion a month to cover SNAP benefits. We got about 42 million recipients on that, right? There's only $5.2 billion in the contingency fund. So you got about half of what you need. So in order to get to even use the contingency fund, as the courts have ordered to be done, the states have to recalculate and adjust their systems to send out partial payments. It's not going to be enough. It's going to be a long lag time to get that done because it's an unprecedented situation. And that's why we're appealing to the Democrats. Stop causing the pain. Just get the government open. We're not asking you to vote for any Republican priority. We're just saying, do what you have always done. Do what you did 13 times during the Biden administration. And Chuck Schumer and 10 Democrats in the Senate did as recently as March of this year. Chuck Schumer himself went on the floor, Stephen, and gave an impassioned speech. Said, we have to do the CR. We have to keep the government open because
this is last March.
Yeah, this is March. This is like 8 months ago.
This is last March.
Yeah. And the same guy now has dug his heels in and says we can't reopen. I mean, it's just, it's a 180. And again, the only explanation is that he's worried now. He's more afraid of the radical rise of the base in his party than he is making people go without food. I mean, that sounds harsh, but that is a reality.
If Donald Trump were not president, would this be happening? What I mean by that is that the last time there was a shutdown this long, it was his first term. Now it's happening in his second term. And you guys, I see you guys religiously calling it deranged, you know, Trump deranged syndrome or something along the line. There we go. So I'm asking it based off of that flavor, the kind of things that y'all have been saying. If Donald Trump were not president, do you believe that the Democrats would be this rigid in their thinking, in your estimation?
No way. No. I mean, that's the whole point, is they're trying to show that they're willing to fight Trump to their base and they'll pick a fight over anything or nothing. Some people call this the Seinfeld shutdown because it's really about nothing. I mean, that's the whole point. But I could tell you this. This is my exhibit A in my case that I'm making to you. We don't do this. I was speaker under President Biden. We did not shut the government down. I mean, I got a lot of pressure from my angry part of my base to do it, but it would be too dangerous for the people. And we were going to do the right thing. We're not going to make troops go unpaid and TSA agents and Border Patrol agents and air traffic controllers. We're not going to stop SNAP benefits and nutrition supplements for women, infants, and children. We wouldn't do that. So we took tough votes. We voted for Biden policies and spending because we care about the people. And the Democrats are demonstrating every day here, they have a very different priority, and it is themselves and their own political survival. That's what this is about.
Speaker, before I let you get on out of here, I'd be remiss in neglecting to not ask you this question. You haven't sworn in Arizona representative-elect Adelita Grijalva yet. Why do you have to follow the Pelosi president? Because I heard you allude to that. A lot of people think that you guys, particularly you by name, are stalling when it comes to this. What do you have to say to that?
We're not stalling. I mean, that precedent is not just hers. It's previous speakers as well. What happens here is that when somebody's elected in a special election, that's what she was. She fulfilled the seat of her late father, which is a great honor to her. You wait until you're back in regular session to do it. I cite Pelosi because she did it a number of times. Like, for example, when they had special elections filled during an August recess for Congress, she would logically wait until the next month when everybody came back to get into session to do it. I'm anxious to administer the oath to her, and we will. But we got to get the lights turned back on here first and get Congress open and operating for the people so that we can get all this done. We got a lot ahead of us. There's no other objective here. I'm just trying to follow the regular order. By the way, she can serve her constituents in every capacity right now. She's got a full staff. She's got offices and computers and phones, and she can be doing what everybody else is doing right now as the rep elect until we just go through the formality of administering the oath.
But what she can't do is go on the Hill and vote as a member of the Democratic Party to have the Epstein files open, which is what people bring up as a reason as to why she hasn't been sworn in yet. To that, you say what?
Yeah, it's another red herring, total distraction. It's a moot point now. Look, the House Oversight is doing a full in-depth investigation, and they're delving through the Epstein files and releasing them. I mean, people have lost track of this, but there's 43,000 pages of that stuff out in the public on the website right now. Two Fridays ago, a little over a week ago, they released the latest Epstein estate files, which is his personal logs, his calendars, his flight records, flight logs, his financial records, and all the rest. We've got subpoenas that are being supplied, answered right now. And the more the information comes in, the more it's released. The only thing that's being redacted right now is the names of young women, the victims who went through these horrific crimes as a result of these sex trafficking operations. And we have to protect them. But that's the only thing that's being withheld. So it's all out there. It's, and more is coming. And I can tell you, the House Oversight Committee is filled with some of the biggest guard dogs in Congress on the Democrat and Republican side. And they've got their teeth sunk into this thing deep. So it's already happening right now. I mean, that's just a non-issue.
Very last question for you. So regarding the filibuster and President Trump, I saw him speaking this morning, and he wants it eliminated in the Senate. He's basically saying that's the only way anything will get done in order to pass, you know, the record-breaking number of bills and circumvent Democratic obstruction, as he called it. What are your feelings about that, eradicating the filibuster and just moving forward without needing 60 votes? What are your thoughts about that?
He and I have talked about this a lot, and what you're hearing is an expression of his anger and frustration that the Democrats won't reopen the government. He doesn't want the American people to hurt. We don't either. And desperate times call for desperate measures. But I reminded him that what a lot of the Senate Republicans believe, that's not a House issue, it's a Senate issue, but what they believe is that it's a very important safeguard against the worst impulses of the Democrat Party. My Republican colleagues will say that, because they say, sir, they've already told us what they would do without the speed bump of the filibuster. If they ever took over again, they would expand the Supreme Court, pack the court. They'd go to 13 or 15 judges or whatever they wanted. They'd make Puerto Rico and D.C. states. They would do, you know, Second Amendment restrictions. They would nationalize federal elections, just go on and on and on, and there'd be nothing to stop them. And so I think the fear on both sides of the aisle, to be fair, has kept the filibuster as part of the tradition. The founders intended the Senate to be what they referred to as the cooling saucer, right? But the House would be hot, lots of activity and lots of emotion, and it would go over there, and it was supposed to simmer and cool so cooler heads prevail in the Senate. If you take the filibuster away, that doesn't exist anymore. And we would have massive whiplashes for the people between elections, between the parties, and that wouldn't be good for the system.
Speaker Johnson, appreciate your time. Thank you so much. I'm going to let you get on out of here and brace yourself for dealing with Sean Hannity, because he's a mess. I know that's going to be tough for you. But anyway, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And just want you to know, as I say to both sides of the aisle, you're always welcome here. I don't take sides. I don't give a damn about all of that. You got something to say? I want you to know that you got a platform here to come and speak, you and everybody on your side of the aisle, anytime you please. So please know that. And thank you so much for coming on Straight Shooter with Stephen A. I appreciate it.
It's an important public service, my friend. Keep it up. Thanks so much.
Thank you, sir. All the best to you. One and only Speaker Johnson, Republican out of Louisiana, right here on Stephen A. Smith Show. Speaker of the House, you heard what his position was. You heard where he stood. You heard what Representative Jim Jordan said and where he stood. We know from last week where the Democrats stand on it. We heard from Hakeem Jeffries the week before that. There's a lot going on. There's a lot to talk about, and I'm here for it. The number to call up is 866-967-6887. That's 866-967-6887. 866-96-POTUS. You're listening live to Straight Shooter with Stephen A., courtesy SiriusXM, POTUS Radio, Channel 124. Back with your calls and more in a minute. Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A. Let's get to the phones, because I spent the first hour and a half doing interviews and giving my opening monologue, so let's get right to it. Let's go to, I'm going to go to Ken in Georgia. You're live with Stephen A. What's up, Ken? How are you?
Hey, Stephen A., how you doing?
I'm doing all right.
You know, you're senior to me in age, you know, Mr. Smith, Stephen A., whichever you prefer.
Stephen A.'s fine. Stephen A.'s fine.
Thank you for... Okay, so you know, just coming in and comment, thank you for what you're doing, not only with sports, but with your platform beyond. And you've become a real voice for the moderates. And for those of us who still believe in balance and reason and honest conversation, you know, all these extremes get all the attention. And you've had a lot of courage to stand up in the middle and speak the truth with a lot of conviction. And, you know, and that's what real leadership is all about. So, you know, I just came out here to say thank you for that. You know, all the guests you brought on, whether it's Lindsey Graham, a lot of people don't understand that, like, you know, like, that's a very influential man. Like, you're talking about 30 years, a lawyer. Yeah. Depending on who you ask, some people would say, oh, is he more influential than LeBron James? Is he more influential than this? But depending on how you live your life, I guarantee you he's probably going to be more influential than where your money is going and how your life is actually being lived. That's a credential human being.
Listen.
But just saying that. Yes, sir.
Politicians aren't always right. We all know that. A lot of times they're not telling the truth. They're not being as forthcoming. They're taking into account their constituency, voters, voter reactions, et cetera, et cetera. But these are elected officials who are running our country and essentially our lives. We have an inherent obligation to listen to what the hell they have to say and not engage in demagoguery and vilification without hearing where they stand and why. And so for me, it's incredibly important that on this show and on this channel, that they know that they always have an outlet to speak, as long as they're willing to answer any question that I ask, I don't care. They have a right to say what they feel, and they have a right to say and to put their perspective on things. And I'm going to make sure they have that on this show. I don't give a damn what anybody thinks. That's the way I roll, and that's the way I'm going to stay. I've always been that way, and I will always be that way. I'm a centrist who leans left. I'm a fiscal conservative and a social moderate. That's who I am. But that does not mean that I'm going to excoriate either side. Who I can't stand are the fringes on both sides. The extreme left or right, can't stand it. That's not, to me, practical, and that's not what touches on the real world to make sure there's some semblance of harmony in our country. And I'm big on that, Ken. That's who I am. Last word. Go ahead.
And I completely agree. You know, with you bringing on people like Westmore, you know, great man, great human being, great ideals, they're coming in. Yes. And, you know, you're just giving the truth, you know, to people. And whether you like it or not, it's just giving them the plays. Like, you're giving them the answers to the test. Whether it's a Jasmine Crockett, it's like how she will be perceived is different from how other people, because you've dealt in different lanes of people. So people just have to understand, like, everything you're saying, you're listening to mine.
And, Ken, if they don't understand, bump them. And I ain't here to please everybody. Give a damn. I'm not trying to make any enemies, but I ain't looking for new friends. I got friends. I got loved ones. I got family. What I care about is America. And I care about putting us as a nation in the best possible position to maximize the greatness that this country has to offer for all of us. All of us. That's my objective. What's theirs out there? Who are the naysayers? Bump them. Gotta go, Ken. Appreciate the call, man. Thank you so much. Paul in Georgia, you're live with Stephen A. What's up, Paul? How are you?
Hey, Stephen, hey, did you know
Roll up your window. Roll up your window, Paul, so we don't hear all of that wind and the audience can hear you clearly, buddy. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. We can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. Excuse me. Did you know that for every 1 million immigrants allowed into this country, we reducing the inflation rate by 2.1%?
Reduce?
Did you know that?
You said reduce?
Yeah.
Okay, I did not know that. I never heard that before.
Did you? Well, there's a geopolitical economist named Peter Zinn that he can reinforce what I just said if you ask him about it.
I will.
The next thing, I got another one for you. Did you know that between now and 2030 that 70 million baby boomers are going to retire?
I didn't know the 70 million. I thought it was like between 50 and 70. But I didn't know it was 70 million. No, sir.
It might be 50 million, but it's 50 million, I think it's the ratio is 3-2, because there's only 35 million Gen Zs coming into the workforce. That means we're going to be short 15 million workers.
Okay.
And to me, they kind of got things ass backwards. They ought to be building out the economy first, and then after we build the economy, then if we need to get rid of any of these guys.
Well, let's stop there. Let's stop right there, Paul. Paul, let me talk to you. Let me tell you why I challenge you on that. I'm not saying, first of all, I'm not for open borders, but I'm not for closing it to the point where we shut off ourselves and we engage in nationalistic mentality and not being a gorgeous mosaic to invite people in. You know, you should come through the borders legally. That is true. Every nation, you know, pretty much tries to control their borders. We shouldn't be excoriated or vilified for trying to do the same. Having said that, I do think it's important as an American citizen to pay attention to at least what some are concerned about. For example, when we talk about the Affordable Care Act, which obviously is an excuse that has been used by the Democratic Party to point to why they haven't signed the CR and why our government isn't open, even though we know blame belongs on both sides of the aisle. But they're making a point about the Affordable Care Act, right? Obamacare, right? And they're talking about how the premiums are going to double and they're concerned about that. Hell yeah, we need to address it, right? But here's the flip side to it. The Affordable Care Act has about 24 million people enrolled on it. Some millions, it actually doubled once COVID took place, which was when the subsidies kicked in. And if the subsidies kicked in after COVID kicked into place and you extended it for 3 years because of the CR, now that COVID has, and we've gotten beyond that period of time, that period of crisis of a pandemic in our country. Okay, why are you talking about the CR now? Or why are you talking about the subsidies rather continuing into perpetuity now? Because you want to address it because it's more expensive than you thought it was. Well, that would mean that it was inconsistent or your information was wrong when you said it wasn't going to cost the American people and the American taxpayer the money that it's actually costing us. And so if you're an American taxpayer out there and you're struggling to make ends meet and you got to dole in this extra dollars because of Obamacare, because of the Affordable Care Act, you might not like it. But it might be something that's easier for you to stomach if you're an American citizen and you're doing it for American citizens. But if you're doing it for people who are not American citizens that come over to the country illegally, and it's an excuse for one particular party to ask you for a continuous exorbitant amount of dollars, that might build and fuel resentment. And if it does that, where does that leave you? So again, it's not a definitive answer one way or another. It's not a definitive side to take. But it is something that warrants a discussion and a debate for all of us to have, so somehow, some way, a resolution can be reached. And if you're not trying to reach a resolution because all you're trying to do is force the hand because you believe this is the one time that you have the leverage to make sure that the government is shut down, people are going to suffer, and as a result, we'll be making our case so we can get what we want with the continual resolution, it's a problem. It's a problem. There's so much that goes into that. It's not that simple. So your point is valid, Paul, if it is for the reasons you say it is. But what if it's for their reasons? Because they put and implemented policies in place that might have helped 24 million plus Americans, especially the desolate and disenfranchised and the impoverished amongst us, which I'm all for paying taxes for, paying extra taxes for. But in the same breath, when we got a deficit that's $37.8 trillion, and that $38.7 trillion doesn't go or didn't go to the causes that we thought it was going to go to, and we got states missing money, losing money, and it's inexplicable as to where that money is, which is taxpayer dollars, you're going to piss the American people off, and they'll be justified in being pissed off. And that's what I'm saying we have to pay attention to. Do you feel me on that?
Yeah, but I also noticed something that you remember when Biden let those 10 million immigrants into the country right before the election?
Okay.
The illegals, that was the magic number to bring inflation down before the election.
Yeah, but
he did that on purpose.
But you're assuming everything is done to bring inflation down, and some things that have contributed to inflation. Our inflation number is at 3.1% as we speak. You understand our deficit is at 38 trillion.
No. I disagree. I own a grocery store.
Hold on.
I watched the number.
Listen, sir. I'm not refuting it with you. I'm telling you that they put the number out there today. Maybe they're wrong. They put the number out there and they said inflation's at 3.1%. I'm not arguing. I've only read the number that they got. I didn't make it up. That's what they said. But we got to go. I appreciate the call, man. Thank you so much. Derek in New York, you're live with Stephen A. Talk to me, D. How are you?
What's up? Is Kathy Hochul worried about her race next year? The Donnie won in New York City?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your question. Could you repeat that, please?
Kathy Hochul, the governor of New York. Is she worried about her election next year?
She should be. I hear the Republican candidate, that woman that's the Republican scheduled to run against her, is pretty sharp. I forgot her name. I think it's Seabird or something, but I hear she's coming for her. I hear that she's very formidable.
At least the
okay.
Could she beat Kathy Hochul in the election?
I don't know. It's New York. I would imagine. But most of the time, Democrats win. There's very few Pataki's as a governor of New York. That doesn't happen often. But maybe she can.
Yep.
Appreciate the call, though, man. Thank you so much. Liz in Myrtle Beach, you're live with Stephen A. Go ahead.
Hey, Stephen A., I'm just saying I'm really glad I found you. Believe it or not, I'd never heard of you, and I'm glad I stuck with your first episode and got used to your personality because I love your show.
Thank you.
I have two quick comments. First of all, you know, I've been reading a lot of hair on fire comments about Mom Donnie. I don't live in New York, obviously. This is who they selected. But I will say this, that the status quo never changes unless we have bold risk takers. Starting with a handful of Englishmen that got into a boat and took 6 months coming over here with the idea that they could be free and they mm-hmm. could have their own religion. It's been that way since the beginning of our country. Any invention, any idea that's been made a difference in our country, it took some crazy person thinking that it could happen. So my thing is, give the guy a chance. He will live or die by his results. The second thing is, sorry, I'm nervous. The second thing is that, you know, I keep hearing that how dare the Dems, you know, that they're not signing on to this clean CR. Mm-hmm. But what's not being said is how, and also a Democrat had the audacity to say that they had leverage. Well, if Republicans had allowed Democrats in the months previous to have any kind of input on, I'll just say, this big bill, which was over, which was about 1,000 pages, included just about everything. They were in the Senate. They were completely shut out, including the House. But the House is, you know, majority, you know, vote. But in the Senate, it's supposed to be 60 votes. Well, the Democrats were not included in any negotiations, no talks, no backdoor meetings, no anything.
Right.
And then because of this, of course, they weren't going to get any Democratic votes. So they changed the rules. Republicans changed the rules to reconciliation, where it took a simple majority, just like in the House. And now they're, lo and behold, they're screaming about the Schumer shutdown and this and that. And but this did not just start with the shutdown.
It never
does. It started previous with disrespect. And obviously, it is not a blowout mandate because the House and the Senate are almost evenly split.
Well, listen, the House and the Senate, I mean, you're talking about 50, what is it? It's like 55 to 50. I'm trying to look at the numbers. I want to look at it and make sure I have it right before I even go any further. Right now, you're talking about 53 to 45 majority in the Senate for the Republicans and a 219 to 213 majority for the Republicans in the House. Three vacancies in the House. The Democrats could reclaim by getting at least three seats, and obviously about four seats in the Senate as well. And so that's how you're looking at it. I mean, it's two independents who caucus with the Democrats in the Senate. In the end, the bottom line is this. You're right. It comes with disrespect. It comes with all of those things. Look at the way they talk about one another. This is one of the problems, and it serves to divide the country because we see how petulant they can be with one another, and we find it impossible to comprehend that you're truly, truly interested in working with one another. And so we're reticent about them and their commitment in that regard, and that makes us all apprehensive about whether or not any progress will be made. And so that to me is what I'm trying to discourage. Certainly they got their tricks going on. We all know this. We were born at night, not last night, Liz. We get it. The flip side to it is that you just hope that cooler heads will prevail and ultimately compassion and heart for the American citizen that's out there working, that's not receiving a paycheck from the federal government. They'll get their act together so this is no longer an issue. That's all we can hope for right now. But I get where you're coming from, Liz. I'll give you the last word really, really quickly because I got to go to commercial. Go ahead, Liz, your last word.
The only thing that I would recommend is for, you know, people to educate themselves, and don't educate yourself by listening to Fox, MSNBC, or any partisan podcast or wherever you usually are getting your information. Mm-hmm. Listen to POTUS, any of the people on POTUS, because I used to be in the left-wing silo. And it's amazing once you get out of that and then you look at it again, your thoughts completely change. And I will say the same thing about anybody who's in the right-wing silo. You know, it's educate yourself. If you're going to watch cable media, listen to news, watch News Nation. At least they try and be down the middle and have both sides represented. But, you know,
or in my case, if you're going to watch it all. Watch it all on both sides so you can deduce who's telling the truth and who's lying. Because I like listening to the liars just like I like listening to the truth tellers, because I know who the liars and the truth tellers are once I'm listening.
Don't have the time to watch it all.
That's true.
You know, but if you're going to watch just one thing, give yourself the best chance, because, you know, it's like anything. You can't make a good opinion about anything if you only have one side.
That's true. Totally true.
It's impossible. You may like what you're hearing. And also, they're all just trying to make money. They're telling you what you want to hear.
Liz, appreciate the call. Call back anytime, okay? You take care. Thank you so much. Straight Shooter with Stephen A. POTUS, Channel 124, Sirius XM. Call in number 866-967-6887. That's 866-96-POTUS. Back with your calls to close out the show in a minute. And thanks again to Jim Jordan and Speaker Mike Johnson as well for coming on to the show. You're listening live to Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Your call to close out the show. 50 minutes Past hour number two back here on the Stephen A. Smith Show, or rather, Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Sirius XM, POTUS Channel 124. By the way, Elise Stefanik, that's the name. That's the U.S. representative that's expected to run against Governor Kathy Hochul in New York. Even though she hasn't made her decision yet, she says she's going to wait until after the election to do so. But according to everybody you speak to, she's pretty damn sharp. And that Kathy Hochul will have her work cut out for her to regain the gubernatorial seat in New York City if indeed she's running against Elise Stefanik. Back to the phones we go at 866-96-POTUS. That's 866-967-6887. Let's go to Enrique in California. You're live with Stephen A. Enrique, how you doing, man? How's everything?
Hey, good afternoon, Stephen. It's going great. Hey, I was hoping you could educate me in that talking point that I keep hearing from the Republican side of the House and that you just made a little bit ago about illegal immigrants being able to get benefits through the Affordable Care Act. I've worked before on social services and on public health, and I was giving benefits to people. And I know from firsthand experience that undocumented are not able to get Medicare or SNAP benefits. So could you just, at least that's here in California, which we give benefits pretty much to everybody.
The belief is in certain states, particularly one like California and others, where you have Medi-Cal, that there is money that is given to the states from the feds that's thrown into the Medicare program. And obviously, because of Medicare, which is called Medi-Cal in California, essentially, if you have an emergency or whatever, you can go and you can go and receive health services when you go to the emergency room or things of that nature. And that is something that people have used to highlight how some, not most, not all, but certainly some illegal immigrants, illegal migrants get a hold of health care, of funneling into our health care system. That is the belief. That is something that has been said. That is something that's been said to me and various others, obviously. So in terms of whether or not that's actually true, I'm quite sure the other side would try to dispute that. But that's something that they've disputed on Capitol Hill. They've disputed it in state legislatures. They've disputed it in states like California, where they're talking about the price of health care, you know, talking about an $8.4 billion a tag that comes attached to it. And you had people saying some of the illegals are going to get some of that for our services. And obviously people have been turned off by that because those are taxpayer dollars that's being funneled in that direction. And they believe that, you know, taxpayer dollars certainly should be something that's prioritized for American citizens or those who are here legally.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think it's always a matter of transparency on the numbers, right? Because it's hard to see.
Always. Like, it's hard to see.
How much of those federal dollars are actually going towards that since the state is putting a lot of their own funds to fund that program. So, hard to tell. But, okay, well, thank you. Thank you for that. I know that I deny benefits to a lot of to a lot of people because they didn't have the legal status. They are able to get Medi-Cal, but it's very limited circumstances.
Got you. Appreciate the call, man. Thank you for calling, Enrique. Feel free to call back anytime, buddy. Thank you so much. Let's go to Irvin in Louisiana. You're live with Stephen A. What's going on?
Stephen A., sir, you've had both sides on your show, and they appear to be polar opposites. I'm going to give you five things that they're alike on.
Okay.
First of all, both sides agree they won't or can't balance the damn budget.
How about that?
Both sides agree. Both sides agree we can't have term limits. Both sides agree we can't prohibit congresspersons from dealing in the stock market.
Stop right there. Stop at two for a second. Term limits. What are you talking about? Senators, 6 years. Representatives, 2 years. But you obviously can get reelected. You're talking about you can't serve but so much time. Okay, go ahead.
Yes. And just like we have with the president, governors, and other elected offices.
Mm-hmm.
And again, number three, they're never going to agree to prohibit congresspersons from basically inside information on the stock market because they're on committees that make certain decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Number four, we've got a health care problem in this country. We got Medicare subsidies and cuts are being an issue. But I haven't seen Democrats or Republicans propose they cut their 75% subsidized by taxpayers, Blue Cross health plans. Haven't heard anybody say we're going to cut our stuff until we get everybody else on board.
Yeah, well, we know they ain't going to do that. You know, we know they ain't going to do that. Go ahead. What's your fifth one?
They're in agreement with that. And both sides say they feel the pain of federal workers who are not getting paid.
No, they don't.
But I haven't seen either side propose they cut their pay. They get paid on the last day of each month. They got their checks on October 31st.
Well, all they say is that they're not accepting any checks. Marjorie Taylor Greene says she wasn't. Jim Jordan said he wasn't. One of the representatives on the Democratic side said they weren't. We hear that, but we all know that in the end, that's a decision they can afford to make, while people who are not receiving checks can't afford to make those decisions. They're not making those decisions for themselves. So we get that loud and clear. There's no surprise there. And I'm one of those people who proposes, you know what? If federal employees don't get paid, you don't get paid. You don't have any health care either. Got to make sure that our elected officials suffer with the people just as much as the people suffer. That's what I think.
Can I say one more thing?
One more thing. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, they're posturing with that, you know, I'm not going to take my check. Put it on the floor for a vote. Let me see a vote, an official vote that the entire Congress is going to bypass their paychecks.
Right.
For 1 month and 2 months until we get this
Irvin,
straight.
I got to run to another caller. I appreciate the call, man. Call back next week, brother, so we can talk. Giovanni in Miami, you're live with Stephen A. You only got a minute, Giovanni. Go ahead.
Yeah, I know, man. Real quick, I told you I follow you on all your platforms. I just called to tell you thank you. I talked to you on the Stephen A. Smith show, and I told you that me and my boys was going to go to the Super Bowl, but there's 10 of us and two unfortunately can't go because of the temporary status.
Yeah.
But the other eight, we're going to go, but we can't take that chance. You feel what I'm saying?
Don't take that chance. Don't take that chance. You got temporary status. Don't go to that Super Bowl because Ice going to be there. Don't do it. The eight of y'all that don't have temporary status, enjoy it. The two that do, stay home. Don't do it. Because Trump's going to try to make some noise. Appreciate the call, man. Thank you so much. Got to get on out of here. I hope y'all enjoyed the show today. Thanks again, the House Judiciary Chairman for the House Judiciary Committee, the one and only Representative Jim Jordan, Republican out of Ohio, and of course, Speaker of the House, Republican out of Louisiana, Mike Johnson. I thought it was important to have both of them on today, considering the election results last night. Mamdani wins the mayoral seat in New York City. Sherrill and Abigail Bamberger, they win the gubernatorial seats in New Jersey and Virginia, respectively. There's a wave that's coming. What's Trump going to do about it? What the GOP is going to do about it? What are the Dems going to do about it? Which direction are you going in? Gavin Newsom? And is he going to be like Mamdani? Or is he going to move towards the center? All of that and more to take into consideration as we move forward. That's it for this edition of Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Holler at y'all next Wednesday. Until then, peace and love, everybody. God bless. Be safe.